People are actually signing it right now.
I want you to do that. And I'm gonna give you the camera. I think I'm gonna sit down. I will tell you right now.
That is beautiful.
That's what happened.
Gotta figure out how many of me are gonna show up. I see one of you guys in my ear.
Sure, I made that, and I'll take my money.
Good evening, it's 5:30. We will call the special call meeting of the Planning Commission to order. We have a quorum and all five members of the commission are present. At this point, we'll recess the meeting and go into the public hearing on the question of whether or not the Planning Commission should ultimately recommend to the City Council that we replace the current zoning code with a new comprehensive zoning code, districting, character areas, tax maps, procedures, and so on. We have a good attendance. Let me just give you some information about what's going on and how we want to conduct a public hearing, and then it's going to be all up to you to offer comment. We're going to try to see where we are at 7:30. If we need some extra time and we're going to finish tonight, we'll do that. If there's clamoring for more comment, we'll reconvene tomorrow at 5:30 to conclude it. But if we can finish tonight, we'll try to do that. If you look at the city's website, which is www.stmarysga.gov, and you go to community development, you'll be able to link to everything relating to the new zoning code. In there, you'll see that the commission has already received several written comments. You'll see the staff report that was given to the commission tonight. So we have the staff report. It's seven pages long. And it's the report of the Community Development Office as to its analysis of the proposed code and whether or not it meets the criteria for adoption. Those are documents that are on the web that are for your public consideration. What we're going to do is take oral comment tonight. If you or anyone you know wants to submit a written report, Joseph, you may have to help. If you or anyone you know wants to submit a written comment, we will keep the hearing record open until the close of business Friday, November 3rd, for anyone to file a written comment. You can file it in writing by emailing it to comment@stmarysga.gov. The requirement is that you have to identify yourself by name and your address in order to have that comment considered. Now, the role of the Planning Commission in this process is to consider the draft, to read the staff report, and to consider the public comment and make a recommendation to the City Council. This code that we're considering was drafted by a consultant hired by the city. Her name was Connie Cooper, or is Connie Cooper. The draft that appears on the website, the city's website, is the latest iteration. It's gone through a lot of iterations, but October 17th was the last draft that we have. I can tell you that there are still some technical issues that we find, and those would be spelling, English composition, maybe an inconsistency between one section of the code and another. There's an ongoing review to try to catch those things before that we have to make the final vote. For the city, Gary Moore, the city's attorney, Jeff Adams, and I did a lot of the review. We've read through this code quite a number of times. We've offered and exchanged legal and editorial comments, but the bulk of the work was done by Connie Cooper. We're going to have the public hearing once we close the public comment period on November 3rd. We'll probably have to agree on a special called meeting the week of the 13th. The 6th.
6th, thank you.
The 6th. So 6th, 7th, 8th. And at that point, we would want to then take up the code and any comments and any recommendations we want to make. For the people here, there are only three recommendations that we can make to the City Council, essentially. Actually, there's a fourth, but we're probably not interested in the fourth. Number one, we can make a recommendation that it go to the City Council as drafted with no changes. The second option is to recommend that it be adopted with changes, and we would have to enumerate those changes. The third choice is to say this code is not appropriate for St. Mary's, and we decline to recommend it. The fourth option that I was saying is that we could recommend that it just goes back for more drafting work, but I think that's not going to be something anybody wants to do, because it's been about 9 or 10 months that it's been in drafting now. that recommendation will be in writing. It'll go to the city council, and the city council will go through a process that's not too dissimilar to what we're going to do. They'll probably want to hear what people have to say. They'll want to know why people think it's good or bad. And then the council will have the option to approve it with changes, send it back for consideration of items that they feel that may be worthy of discussion and more work. But that's generally the process that will occur over the next probably 30 to 60 days. As far as this public hearing is concerned, you were asked to check mark the attendance list if you wanted to speak. We will take each person who wants to speak in the order that they appear on that sheet. We'd like to have as many people speak as possible. So what we're going to do is limit all comment to 5 minutes. And if you really wound up, we could give you like 5 and a half minutes. But we'll try to, we're not going to be hard and fast. If you're in the middle of a thought, you're not going to have to sit down. But we're going to try to stay there so everybody who wants to talk can talk. If we get through everybody who wants to talk, and you still feel there's more you want to add, or somebody says something that's struck a chord with you that you think you need to say something about, we'll recognize people by raising their hand. When it's your turn to speak, please come to the podium in front of us. Speak into the microphone. We do have audio, but we're going to have an ancillary recording device because the audio has been a problem with the recording system. What you saw out on the table was a sheet that had 10 conditions or 10 requirements that the Planning Commission has to consider before it can vote yea or nay on a proposed change of zoning code. When you stand to give public comment, I'd ask you to read this while we're talking here, but look at those requirements that we have to follow, because the more specific you can be about your comment or something you want to see changed, or why it doesn't meet one of these requirements, or why it does meet one of these requirements, will be helpful as we analyze what we're going to do when we have to consider this code for adoption. So that's would be all I have as far as some ground rules at this point. Jeff, do you have the list?
We have Tom Canny looks like he'll be the first to speak, if you'd like to speak, Tom.
We have J.U. to be determined, so we'll...
We just happen to be the first one here. I'm going to defer a little later.
Okay. Tom Canning, 410 Point Peter Place. I've been following the development of this for some time, and I don't have any single issue with the...
Thank you. Take that mic.
It would
be a lot better.
Can you hear? Yeah. Okay. So, to my comments, I'm more concerned about what I haven't read rather than what I have read. And you may have considered this, it may be out there somewhere, but I haven't seen it. And that's the consequences of the rezoning, the consequences specifically to the individual homeowners and to the city. And the types of things I'm talking about is as these new zoning requirements come into place, and I, in particular, I focused in on the higher density and the stormwater remediation aspects of the rezoning, the requirements for smaller lots and better stormwater control. All of those things mean added dollars, and I have no insight into this, but so it's just a raw question on whether or not, whether it's new construction or however it comes out to be, whether mortgage companies will be able to include these additional costs into people qualifying for the very homes that they're trying to buy, smaller lots, smaller houses, but far more landscaping and additional materials and things like that. So if those things are considered and if those things are a non-issue, then fine. The other item is not only the added construction costs, but the long-term maintenance costs. The individual homeowners, instead of just having a standard concrete driveway, would have something that actually requires, based on what I've read, a more professional type maintenance and whatever to keep it up to speed, keep it functioning. And if they are not prepared for that, or it's not being done properly, then in short order those remediation actions are wind up to be zero, and now you're back to the stormwater problems that we have so many places in the city. So I'm not up here today to counter or suggest that whatever your proposals for the rezoning, I have an issue with that. I'm just concerned about the consequences downstream, not only for the city but for the individual landowner. And I did take a look at some of the costs that are projected for the additional costs, and just for as an example, permeable material, whether it be concrete or brick, could be anywhere from $5 to $12 a square foot over, you know, which right now you might be able to get concrete for $2 a square foot or something like that. So there's a substantial difference there. And then the ongoing maintenance, however often that occurs. And it's not only cleaning out permeable material, but it's also the additional equipment, whether it be cisterns or drainage for the roofs or whatever else comes into play for those homes. All of those things have a shelf life. They'll all expire. So I just, and the last item on this downstream consequences is enforcement. I mean, most people hopefully will take the responsibility on and do it on their own, but if we don't have those items understood in advance and are prepared to hold people accountable, i.e. enforcement, once again, neighbors could suffer while somebody doesn't do their maintenance. So I'd like, whether it's an amendment, whether it's a appendix or some other document, but I'd like to think that all of these consequences are considered before new zoning is put into place. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Beaver.
My name is George Beaver. I live at 204 Bartlett Street. I've gotten kind of old living here in St. Mary's, and a lot of people think that we just don't want to see anything change. But trust me, if you'd lived here back in the 1960s when I moved here, you'd see changes are a very good thing. One of the changes that I have looked at that I've questioned is the distance apart that you're proposing for the building of houses. And I would address the question to Mike as to what was the thought process to put houses very close together.
The code provides a lot of different housing configurations. There's the cottages, there could be townhouses, there's apartments. So when you start talking about things like that, it's I think it gets too subjective. The reality is we're here to hear comments on things you either like or don't like in the code, or things that you think we should change.
All right, well, the reason I ask that is because I've sat up here before, and our main purpose was to protect the health and safety of the people in the community. And I'll point out that in the business district, that where the houses or the buildings are allowed to be right up against each other, you have a big increase in the codes, primarily electric. Everything is in conduit. And the reason isn't because a dress shop is more likely to burn than a house. The fact is that when they're closer together, they're more likely to be like dominoes, and the fire spread from building to building. The difference between a piece of half inch and 5/8 inch sheetrock is not going to protect you from the fire next door. So, you know, looking at that, it'd be hard not to have observed the problems that we have with fires out west when the wind is blowing. And typically here in the evenings, we have about a 10 mile an hour wind. And if you have a fire and it just sits there, it's going to burn that house. But when the higher that the wind is blowing, the more likely it is that it's going to spread from house to house. And this is of a particular concern to me, since the house on either side of me has burnt as well as the house next door to that. Miss Kennison had a mobile home when I built my house there, and it caught on fire. It was 40 feet from me. Now, the house that I live in is brick, and it didn't do anything to the brick, but my greenhouse, which is corrugated fiberglass, it melted the fiberglass off of it. When I came home and saw this fire up above my roof, I thought it was my house on fire. So it's just, to me, something that needs to be thought over, that the closer you put houses together, the more likely it is that you're going to have a catastrophe down the road. Thank you.
Mr. Fox?
Good evening. I'm Mark Fouts. I live at 310 West Bryant Street. First thing I want to do is thank you all for all the work you've done on this this ordinance thing. I do have some concerns. One of them has to do with the closeness of the house or the density. And I hear this word coming from the council again and again that density is going to be the savior of St. Mary's. I'm very concerned over the water runoff. If you have a 1,600 square foot house, based on your all's roof recommendations, a 1-inch rain is going to generate in excess of 1,100 gallons of water every time it rains 1 inch. What do you do with the water runoff? I understand in today's environment we have some particular language in the ordinance that states that water runoff is not going to be in a new building, the water runoff is going to be contained on that property. That such language is not in this new ordinance. So there's no protection for any of the neighbors where 1,100 gallons of water is going to run to their property. That's going to cause settling, it's going to cause insects, it's going to cause mold. Now maybe with the new water, whatever you all want to call it, the water runoff council or whatever, maybe in 10 or 15 years, maybe that can be taken out. But for the time being, the neighbors need some sign of protection for water runoff. One of the things I did not see in this particular document is information on parking in the residential areas. So let's say I'm going to buy a cottage house on a 30 by 80 foot lot. I have my 20 foot driveway that's prescribed, and I have my 18 foot carport. I have my boat. My wife and I each have a car. My teenage son has a car. Where do those cars go? Do we stick them in the easement? Do we stick them on the highway? Do we stick them on the street? Do we clog things up? That's not in there. It needs to be in there. Several of your setbacks are 10 feet from property lines. Some of them actually go to the property lines. 10 feet leaves no room. That's from me to you. That's someone's backyard. So if you're the property owner, Mike, if you're the property owner and I'm this guy, and I decide what I think is yard art in my backyard, and I like to play loud music, I like to yell, I like to curse, I like to do whatever, that's how close you are to me. So we don't have privacy anymore. So if you get a neighbor that's the same sex, the same political party, that's the same religion, that's the same everything, maybe you can get along. But if any of you all ever had the roommate from hell in college, you know darn well they're kind of fun to watch from a distance, but when you get up close, they're not so fun anymore. So you might want to keep that in mind. Another thing, I need some clarification. On page 42, section 4.0682, There's a paragraph in there that says, a lot shall meet the minimum required lot width for the length of the required lot, except for cul-de-sac and elbow lots described in section A3. What does that mean?
That's, so on a turn radius, they often, ordinance will exempt you from that because a minimum front lot will say 25 feet a lot of times, or 50 or 75. But if it's on a turn radius, that often can't be met by that, so they allow that.
Well, this has to do with depth and width of lots.
Yeah, and so that's what we're talking about. It's so often that's been exempted in a zoning ordinance if it has to do with the curvature of a elbow lot or a cul-de-sac.
So the depth is what's prescribed in the ordinance in the table. Is that correct?
Right. So the depth on such an issue usually would not be what we're talking about. It's usually the width on a cul-de-sac or something like that. So where you have a topographic kind of problem, that allows some kind of variance.
Okay. One of the other things, last week I had asked if you had checked on crime statistics in dense areas. Well, I did. International Journal of Criminal Justice Sciences, they wrote a paper back in 2006, it's Property Crimes and Violence in the United States, an analysis of the influence of population density. They did find a correlation between with both violent and nonviolent crimes in dense areas. So we need to keep that into consideration. If you want to densify things, you need to up your police force too. Finally, fences. I'd like to see you put into the document that if someone wants to build a house and they want to use these 10-foot minimum setbacks, they ought to be made to put up the privacy fence. There's an old saying, the fences make good neighbors. Well, I think that's true. If you're only 10 feet away, I'm going to put a privacy fence up. There's no question about it. I'm going to do it. So I think that should be incumbent on the builder, whoever builds the new one. If you really want to do this, they ought to put a privacy fence up to protect the neighbors. Because as I say, unless you're at the same mindset, you're going to have conflict. And part of what you all said you wanted to do in here was avoid conflict. And you want to avoid water problems, and you want to keep the land, and you want to preserve things. I think density goes directly against every one of those issues.
Do you have a section number for the 10-foot space that you're talking about?
The 10-foot what?
The 10-foot space that you're talking about, do you have a section number in the code that you're referring to?
It's in the, it's the side, the rear setback on your cottage houses. Has a side setback of 10 feet. If you do a village house, it has a side setback of 10 feet, a rear setback of 10 feet. If you do a duplex or a triplex, this is interesting. You can put a duplex or a triplex in a 30 by 100 foot lot. That has a 10 foot setbacks on the side and rear of that too. That's something people need to think about. 10 feet, that's this far. Too close for comfort as far as I'm concerned. Thank you.
All right. Let me just observe one thing. Zoning traditionally covers use of land. With the form-based provision in this proposed ordinance, it also covers the appearance. So this code is really looking at use and appearance. So when you talk about water runoff and permeability, you're really getting in an enforcement. You're getting into other areas of the city's ordinances, and if you're at the city council meetings, you know that the city council has been very concerned about the resiliency and water management and stormwater management, and is actively looking at how they can handle stormwater management. So your concerns about stormwater management really do not come under the zoning code. I understand runoff and how it affects neighbors, and those are enforcement issues or nuisance issues that come under different sections of the city's ordinances.
But you're allowing people to build in a haphazard manner, and you are causing damage to the neighbors nearby. Under tort law, you can collect damages for that under tort law. The question is, who are you going to collect damages from? Is it the builder? Is it the owner? Or is it the city? Because if you're not going to protect the people's property, somebody is liable for it. So you might want to think about it a little bit.
Thank you.
Ms. McBride.
Good afternoon. Carmelita McBride, 207 East Ashley Street. I'm just going to piggyback off of some of the things that they were saying because I am in the neighborhood, one of the neighborhoods that this is going to affect. And the gentleman raised a good question about the mortgage company. I work for a financial institution, and that is going to be the first thing I do tomorrow. Go in and find out how this is going to affect people being able to get mortgages. But I am here as a voice for the elderly, the retired, and the handicapped people in the neighborhood where we live. I am from St. Mary's, so don't think I'm just moving in trying to willy-nilly. No, I born, raised here, left, came back because of the kind of town that it is. I could have stayed in Fort Walton Beach where I was, where it is a highly commercial area, you know, no sleep, 24 hours a day, you can go. That's not what we're trying to make downtown St. Mary's. Not that we don't want to see change. Don't get that I'm up here every week or every other week and I don't want to see change in St. Mary's. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying we are just asking you guys, and as I say, I'm up here for my mom is retired and widow at the same time. She's worked all her life, and I look at Ms. Ella and Mr. Nat that has worked all their life, and they're just to the point where they just want to have peace in their neighborhood. And I ask you guys to just reconsider and think of, I know you want change and I want change too, but there is an overkill sometime. There's places for things that you're trying to do, and then there's just not neighborhoods for it. And my heart aches so bad when I stand up here and it seems like we're just begging for just peace. Not that we don't want change. It's just changes in my backyard. That's what I'm against. That's all I have to say.
Let's see. Is it Eloise Wilson? Is it Wilson? 1,000.
Good evening. My name is Eloise Wilson, and I reside at 1,000 Norris Street. And I have resided there for 38 years.
We can't.
And